And now you'll hear Andrea Pritchard of Copwatch, who actually led the protest march down from Telegraph, 10 blocks, some people, as I said, carrying heavy backpacks, taking their animals with them, into, well, they couldn't bring their animals inside, but all the way down to this North Senior Center in Berkeley, where the Police Review Commission meeting was heard. And Andrea Pritchard presents a series of complaints and speaks about them.
You've got the information from the February complaint. My hope is that development of this thing that says Operation AvWatch is another name for discrimination. I just gave Barbara some copies of that. And what that is just a sampling of stories and incidents that CopWatch has heard over the last couple of days. The first conference was held in February to highlight some of the activity that was happening at that time. Very similar, there was a crackdown. And it was especially inhumane because at that time, if you remember, during the month of February, it was a very wet month. And homeless folks were having to sit under the awnings and try somehow to find some shelter, even during the daylight hours, to get out of the rain. And it was during those times that officers were telling people to move along. And you've got to understand what the move along technique is. Technically, an officer walks up and says, you gotta move along. I gotta ask you to move. Technically, the officer is asking that person to move. That person may, however, not know that they have the right to remain. And there's this horribly inhumane game that the police play with people who are not aware of their rights, and that's called letting move the homeless. And they move them many times a day. And at that time, it was in the rain. And if you watch, the officers will actually force someone to move from sitting against the building to the curbside where they are exposed to the elements. And they just get built. So that was one of the aspects of my complaint. And this whole thing, as this complaint's activity, what we're highlighting are two main points. One is that there are abuses occurring of homeless people, and the commission is absolutely out of touch with what is happening to homeless people. Now, it's like there's two sides of a bridge or something, and there's no bridge, right? Homeless people are being abused. You can count on it. You're hearing it tonight, all right? And you're sitting there going, well, we don't have any complaints. We don't have it in writing. The Police Review Commission, in its founding documents, one of the principles of the PRC was that it was to be accessible. It was going to meet in locations that were accessible to people. And that accessibility is the main priority for people. And if that means that you need to amend some of your procedures or adopt the way that you do business to accommodate special populations, I recommend that you do so. Because not to do so is to stick your head in the sand. And to not take up those duties and responsibilities which you have to deal with. Because what folks have said, they're doing tonight, the tensions are escalating. And if somebody doesn't take some action to hear these complaints, and to remedy that situation, that what happened last night, thank goodness, it didn't get a whole lot worse. I mean, that's another that we described to you, it's a simple argument. Officers come, they target the wrong person, they come, fuck you. And the kid says, well, fuck you back. And the officer says, well, no. And that's where the officer got bombs on the kid. The other people get upset. Now you start throwing officers on the scene. It's dry tinder, and all it needs is a spark. And so you folks can go around what you can do a lot to diffuse these tensions. So number one, you have to figure out how to become more accessible to homeless people. Are you accessible to people who don't read and write? That the little people don't get used? Are you accessible to people who... I am so amazed that the people who came here tonight said that they carried huge packs on their backs all the way from Telegraph Avenue because they felt so strongly about these issues and because they had enough faith that you would do something. That it was worth it for them. Somebody else would say, but understanding that, how many other people have dogs that they need for protection? It's a real part of the culture. This room is not accessible to people with dogs. Okay? So unless, you know what I'm saying? That there's a lot of special needs that have to be taken into account in order to become accessible. I think you need to start to look into that and start to talk to homeless people. I'm also saying that I gave you a sampling of incidents. And I know that the PRC is very understaffed. But I'm hoping that commissioners and or investigators will go up to Telegraph and will begin to take, OSHA movement, he was left, but back in 1986, Yeah, he would stand out there with a clipboard and take notes and ask people, and he, as a commissioner, would find out firsthand from people. You know, and I think it's quite, and that's why I put this to you as a policy complaint. Because it's not about investigating all these little incidents. You know, did Melissa get a ticket for trespassing because she touched Cody's precious bookstore wall? You know, we're in the spirit of mediation, right? You guys don't have to sit on a thousand board of inquiry where each little item is so small. Let's try to deal with it. And I'm asking you to be proactive in this situation. I'm asking you to come up with a strategy. How are we going to hear the homeless? And what are we going to do? And I'm kind of disappointed because I submitted that complaint to you in February, and, you know, the chief, I gave it to you on March 3rd, and I think that it left the PLC office, the letter was dated April 29th, that it went to the chief, so that's 2 months later. Then the chief took another month to get back, and then by the time it was 4 months later. Okay, so much for the complaint process is a pretty cumbersome and slow process, from what I can discern. I mean, we're all trying to have faith, we're all trying to get behind you and try to work with you and try to make the PLC work. So we all got to do work. So that's the February situation. So the first part is, I'd like you guys to really look at homelessness in the big picture. The other part is, let us look at the legality of crackdowns. You know, people wear a t-shirt that says crackdown is code for harassment. And then we can substitute the word, right, we're going to be harassing our telegram, and we're going to see if we can dislodge the homeless like a bunch of barnacles from the bottom of a boat or something. You know, well, we couldn't get them with using the law. So, you know, maybe we'll ticket them to death. And I'm asking you, you don't have to do anything, you can go home and have a beer, but I'm asking you to look at how city services are being used. People talk about homeless people as being service resistant. Why would these people not help? The kind of help that they're currently receiving on Telegraph Avenue is as follows. And this is all under the direction of the police department, so I think you're well within your right to investigate the role of animal control, for example. Are they helping people or are they harassing people? Look at the role of the mobile crisis unit. Many times people really appreciate their services. And look at unwanted psychological interviews.
How are you today? You look a little strange.
Maybe a 5150 would get you out of here. You know, that's not many people sitting around, they want to talk to you. They don't want to talk, I mean, and then of course it's like a popular public voice. And I have to say this, I mean, you know, some people, observers, I mean, it's 3:30 in the afternoon, a woman is sitting with a baby on the sidewalk, perfectly within her right. And you know, I have to say, it reminded me somewhere of Rosa Parks. Because when they're surrounded by police officers, the public works guy is blasting away at an already clean sidewalk, and the police come up to him and say, okay, well, are we going to move? And she looked at the officer and she said, oh, yeah, I'm tired of moving. I'm tired of this. You know? So people are very cynical about this idea of services, and are they really serving, or are they being used to harass people? And this whole notion of a crackdown, what are they cracking down on, and who is being targeted? And it is absolutely crystal clear. The purpose of the so-called crackdown, the problem was the homeless people, and the solution is a crackdown against them. That is straight up discrimination. It's not legal. It's not moral. And so I think you're showing an excellent point. I think it is incumbent upon you guys once again to protest, to take some exception to this, to go public, because if you don't, that is your power, and if you don't fight for that power, you're going to lose that power, and if you lose that power, we lose. Right? So that's why we're here today. We're in a spirit of cooperation. We're really hoping that you folks are going to make some more efforts. And we're trying to use the policy complaint process as new, and that's why I'm willing to be flexible and roll with this. I'm a little disappointed, to be honest, that this question wasn't dealt with some time ago, because we might have been able to prevent what's currently happening. So, that's your point, what do you think?
Will the Police Review Commission keep its word and really put the pressure on the City Council to stop the crackdown, to make sure the future crackdowns are cleared? I don't know if that sounds like a contradiction, because a crackdown sounds like an illegal course of conduct, but I suppose it can be a legal crackdown. Will they hold meetings up on Telegraph accessible to the homeless? Will they have investigators out on the avenue? Will they keep their promises in all these matters? And perhaps equally important, will council member Chris Worthington, the most liberal Berkeley City Council member, take a public stance and mobilize the community behind him in this election year when people are worried about how they're going to appeal to the more conservative folks who have more money? Or we're going to have similar questions coming up here in Santa Cruz as election time rolls around. A brief commercial announcement here, actually not really a commercial announcement. On Monday, June 29th, Don't Sleep Tonight night will be coming up here. And those of you who have been following the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban, which is still being pressed, even though we had inadequate signatures, we pressed for an El Nino extension, which the city clerk turned down. We have not turned in our petition signatures so that we can refile for a second drive, should we choose to do so, in the months ahead. The activists behind that, particularly activist David Silva, have been working intensely to get together a Don't Sleep Tonight night in solidarity with homeless people who won't be allowed to sleep. As you know, in Santa Cruz, sleep outside after 11 or cover up with a blanket outside, that's a $162 fine. Do it twice within 48 hours, that's 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine at a maximum, or the threat thereof. So that evening, on the evening of June 29th, Monday night, we're urging everyone to stay up that night. Stay up in your home, stay up on the streets, stay up and support your sisters and brothers outside who have no legal place to sleep and who moreover face criminal penalties if they do what all of us have to do every night, sleep. For more information on this, give a call to HOF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-4833. And we'll be talking about this on Sunday again, the day before Don't Sleep Tonight night, or Insomnia night, as some have called it. Recently I returned from a trip to San Diego, where as of 2 days ago, I haven't heard anything different, there are more than 150 people every night in front of the San Diego Concourse, the San Diego City Hall and Shopping Center complex, downtown San Diego, sleeping out because they have no legal place to sleep, and because the city, in essence, has been mismanaging Stuart McKinney property and sabotaging the effects of federal law, which were designed to give homeless people first priority on abandoned and unused federal property. But San Diego City authorities and attorneys have been thwarting that and refusing to deal with legitimate shelter needs of homeless people in San Diego while maintaining their own sleeping ban laws down there. We went down there, we slept out with the San Diego homeless, and talked to some of them, and here's one of those interviews from about a week ago. Well, this is the nerve center of the city where they spend millions for the symphony, but not a penny for a basic shelter for what? How many hundred homeless people?
Because they spent the millions on the building rather than the symphony.
Well, you can't be perfect about these things. Let's not complain, for heaven's sakes. In any case, earlier, a few minutes ago, we were all on the 12th floor trying to talk to the city council, which apparently, according to the mayor, she was protecting the city council from this kind of rabble-rousing theme, which you, Roger, were trying to get out, about something about handicapped people. What do we care about handicapped? What is this?
And the protest cares about the handicapped people. They were complaining that they were blocking the sidewalks and stuff like that, and the handicapped people cannot do that because they're in their wheelchairs and, you know, they're on their crutches. And I would, you know, I just wonder how many of those members have come down here and seen this. I don't know how they can express blocking the sidewalk when a person is sitting down. There is no law anywhere that states that you can't sleep, that you can't sit there, that you can't walk around. There's no law prohibiting a person from doing this, you know.
But Council Member Stevens, whose aide, by the way, rode down with us from the 12th floor, apparently had some concerns about the handicapped. Perhaps he suggests they should all go to Tijuana. Well, what's his plan for dealing with the handicapped homeless?
I haven't really got to speak with them about it because the mayor wouldn't let me talk to them. She just kind of cut me off. She said we were all on the same subject. I had asked her.
How many people did speak at this public comment period?
Just two people.
Well, two is a lot. Three is a crowd. Haven't you ever heard that before?
And one of them was talking about something else.
So there was one speaker on a homeless topic, and who was that?
Dan Fagan, and Forrester, he spoke on it too.
But I was also talking about how they
about how one of the councilmen had misused his position in debating the demonstration yesterday, rather than about the demonstration itself.
And how had that council person, who was it who misused their position?
That was Stevens. He was doing it today basically the same way. The rules, which the mayor says is part of the law here, are that someone in that position can't be debating you during the public comment. But he was doing that yesterday, asking the kind of questions that if you stop beating your wife, that basically say something without saying.
The homeless stop shitting on the sidewalk, that sort of thing.
That sort of thing.
Well, it's a very serious question. Yeah. Now, what did Dan have to say in response to this?
Dan was more talking about the demonstration directly. I was the one that was talking on the
improper responses by Stevens. You know, I would suggest that perhaps Councilmember Stevens doesn't have a really adequate picture and needs maybe 20 or 30 homeless people in his office to give him a full view of the situation. What do people think about that?
We've had 10 people in his office and had a conversation with him. And being in his office, he's real alerted, concerned, and says this isn't this.
Right. I think you should stay in his office until you see an indication that he really understands. Like maybe a week.
We stayed there 4 hours.
4 hours is not really enough time. The man is a slow learner, let's face it.
Okay.
The guy is, he's got learning disabilities, and therefore ethically challenged, that sort of thing. So he needs to be really given the full...
He has to be ethically challenged or he wouldn't be there.
Indeed, and I think because we have to recognize his handicap, and in recognizing it, possibly... give him the consideration he needs, possibly sleeping bags, signs, maybe a meal. Invite him to join, serve a meal in his office and invite him to join the feed, I mean, hey, the guy's got, maybe he's undernourished as well in many ways.
Yeah.
Did you speak as well? Or no, he didn't speak. Well, anyway, that's what's happening here at the City Council Chambers, I should say, upstairs. That's what's not happening in the City Council Chambers. Out here on the street is where it's happening. And does anybody have any? You've been standing around. What's your name?
Florence Will.
Florence, what do you make of all these so-called big-time activists going in and shouting, spouting off their mouths, or shooting off their
heads? Well, I think it's ridiculous about her daughter being in another country, and she's more concerned about her daughter than her constituent.
You mean Mayor Golden?
Mayor Golden's daughter.
Well, Mayor Golden's daughter and the need for a symphonic experience for the city is a pressing.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But his daughter was in Indonesia just as everything fell apart and managed to just get out by the skin of her teeth.
Well, we certainly...
Well, I'd like to point out to her that we might have a parallel circumstance happening in San Diego to what happened in Indonesia if she doesn't pay attention.
You dreamer, you.
Yeah, right.
Okay, well, anybody want to add anything to this?
I do. At 2 o'clock today, down here at the Wells Fargo building, there's a couple of TV stations and radio stations that call.
The complaints about economic discrimination, employment discrimination?
Yes, we're going to file them today at 2 o'clock. I'm going to go down there and file them. And I'm hoping that the homeless people here follow me down there to, to back me up on this thing. I have about 25 complaints against McDonald's. I have about 25 complaints against the city, the county, Horton Plaza, the security, the police department, the Grand Hotel, the security all over that does all the buildings and everything. And at 2 o'clock today, hopefully we'll get some coverage down there.
What happened at 2 o'clock, however, was that Roger Scott, the man you heard speaking, myself, video journalist Becky Johnson, and some other homeless activists and some homeless folks showed up down there and were immediately confronted with security guards who did not want us congregating in front of the building. We were actually meeting in order to go up to the 15th floor of the federal office, the Equal Employment Opportunities Commission. Yes, it sounds outrageous that private Wells Fargo security spooks, and that's what they looked like with their business suits and dark glasses. Actually, there was only one of them who was actually out, another one was sort of lingering in the background, demanding we go away, demanding we not record, demanding we not be present. We, of course, ignored this person under threat of arrest, and about 10 homeless people eventually filed complaints on the 15th floor of the Wells Fargo building, which was situated the offices of the EEOC. The complaints, of course, could not be made on the basis of homeless status. It's not illegal to discriminate against someone because she or he is homeless. Instead, homeless people were advised to consider whether they were discriminated against because they were considered to be disabled or mentally ill or something about that along those lines. And a number of them filed complaints about that because the actual circumstances where, as I may have mentioned on an earlier show, a man with a backpack would go into a place like McDonald's and request an application form, and you need to apply for jobs in order to get general assistance in San Diego. You need to apply for a number of them each day. The McDonald's and other employers would habitually tell the person with the backpack, "We don't have any forms." The person with the backpack would leave, and then his friend would come in without a backpack, looking a little more conservative or clean cut, and they would be given a form. Suddenly the forms would appear, and they'd be able to fill them out. So these complaints were made to the EEOC, and it was interesting. The EEOC was quite courteous and tried to be helpful in accommodating them. I think that whether they will have any real impact in terms of any real complaints being pursued by the EEOC, they'll at least be investigating them, and that may put employers in San Diego on notice that if they do discriminate in such a blatant fashion against even giving an application form to a homeless person, they will face some kind of scrutiny, and this may make them a little more cautious in what they're doing. Now, what we have next here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and you're listening to Backwoods Pier's Broadsides on Thursday, June 25th, the recorded version. I'm over the hill in St. James Park, trying to encourage the city to allow homeless people to be able to be in public spaces without harassment from the police. You may remember a year ago, the San Jose City Council voted to make it an automatic misdemeanor crime, punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine, to sit down on any sidewalk in a 66-block area in the inner city, with the exception of parks and bus stops. Since parks close at dusk, I guess that means the bus stops are going to be pretty busy all night, except there aren't that many of them. Bus benches, actually. Bus stops are not considered safe zones. They're only benches. So the whole series of anti-homeless laws and more recent anti-homeless actions in San Jose that we're going to be challenging today over in St. James Park, when you're listening to the show, or presumably it will already be happening, the city is throwing a Music in the Other Park extravaganza, which sounds like a positive thing. Concerts, public concerts, free public concerts are good things, but the fall-to-all publicity surrounding this was of a sort of a take-back-our-town quality, such as rednecks and red shirts used here in Santa Cruz in 1990 to oppose basic homeless rights, get the bums out of town, that sort of thing. So in any case, we are looking into that, and you're hearing a recorded show, because I can't be in the studio. Last November, Happy John Dine was shot by Officer Connell Carey, dead, two shots from his revolver, killed Dine at the corner of Soquel and Front. Carey claimed that Dine was reaching for a weapon, and it was later found near his side was a replica, a plastic toy gun. There was a lot of questions raised about this, as I mentioned earlier in the show, and as those who followed this issue know, the Police Review Commission came up with a different story than the police chief, who came up with a different story than Officer Carey. There were different stories all around. Actually, Carey and the Citizens Police Review Board came up with the same story, finally. Celia Scott, who was mayor, quickly put the report by the district attorney on the whole matter in the library as a public document, which was quite commendable. Past shootings took years to get to the public domain. This happened very quickly. For instance, the Brian Andrus shooting, he wasn't killed, but he's facing trial. He's the man who was hit. He was shot four or five times by police for allegedly wielding a baseball bat right at the door of his home when police invaded his home, supposedly on a domestic violence complaint, which there's been some dispute about. In any case, the Dine case that we followed had the DA's investigation in the library. Of course, there was no further investigation by the Police Review Commission, by the Citizens Police Review Board here in Santa Cruz. There was no further analysis or cross-examination of witnesses. But the one element that was missing was the radio dispatch tape. The radio dispatch tape is the tape made from the radio dispatcher who calls and receives calls from police officers in the field in their police cars, or presumably walking on their beats. which kind of describe what's going on. We asked for a copy of that tape through attorney Ed Fry, did Santa Cruzans for full disclosure, the group I was working with, and they sent us a tape, the first 5 minutes of which was blank. That was the 5 minutes before and a minute or two after Happy John Dine was shot, which happened about 6:40 on November 13th, 1997. Well, after a lot of writing back and forth and some strange communications from Police Chief Steve Belcher, who claimed that we couldn't possibly have gotten the censored tape, and then he sent us a letter saying we shouldn't have gotten any tape, how did we get a tape at all? And finally he said he was sending us into Gary Yamane, the Citizens Police Review Board staff person, to check our tape with his tape, and we did that. And finally we got a tape, which we're now going to play for you, of the radio transmissions. Now there's no smoking gun here, so to speak, although I guess there was one smoking gun that day, and one dead homeless person, or homeless activist, since Happy John Dine was not specifically homeless at the time he was shot, simply a sympathizer for civil rights for the homeless, and a protester, peaceful protester with homeless people at the City Hall Sleepers Vigil in 1996, in front of City Hall asking for the right to sleep. This tape is not a smoking gun. It is simply another document in the puzzle. And since we've been presenting various parts of that puzzle to you, members of the audience, we're going to give you this dispatch tape as well. It's not clear whether this tape was, as you might say, doctored, censored, or edited. Police Chief Steve Belcher assures us it was not. I don't wish to contradict him necessarily. I don't know if he's telling the truth or if he's not telling the truth. I believe I've known times in the past when I've doubted his veracity. Certainly I've doubted his judgment. But anyway, here's the dispatch tape from starting with 1837, military time, for 6:37 on that fatal day in November when Happy John Dine was shot dead, allegedly for brandishing, pointing, or reaching for a toy weapon, depending on who you want to believe.
Location is front and Cathcart. Negative, we're at Front, just south of SoCal. Front Street, just south of SoCal.
Copy, Front, south of SoCal, officer involved shooting. Officers are code 4 and subject down. We'll roll fire and ambulance.
158, I'm in the area, you're covered.
158.
183, 136.
Go ahead.
Go ahead and let me know what you need shut down for this crime scene.
Okay, whoever's right there can shut it down. Run a cop car. And we're going to need a unit to shut down southbound Front, somewhere north of the Silver Bullet.
136, Front, north of the Silver Bullet.
136, copy.
M111, I'm in route.
M111, 1841.
M115, same.
115.
Andrew Cruz, 149, I'm on SoCal, stop being southbound.
149, copy, stopping southbound, SoCal, 1841.
Alright, 306, Cam in the area, do you have enough units or you need anyone else?
It looks okay for now.
167, I'll be out in front, gas guard.
167, front, gas guard, 1842.
40 Alpha.
140.
.183, 115, where do you need me?
Why don't you just come up to the scene? Front Street just south of SoCal. The scene is code 4.
Check.
183, make sure fire knows it's code 4 for them to come in.
Copy.
And there's more. You've been listening to the transcript of the transcript, a copy of the radio dispatch tape, according to Chief Belcher, who sent it to us through Attorney Ed Fry, the Santa Cruzans, for full disclosure. You may notice lots of clicks in the tape. It could be that that is how they normally edit dispatch tapes. Not being a professional investigator or one who's had any experience looking over radio dispatch tapes, I can't tell. And I haven't taken this tape to an expert to get it looked at. And also, we haven't played you the whole tape. We played you the first, 5 or 10 minutes of it. It does seem certainly to be shorter than the time period that actually elapsed, which could be quite reasonable. It could be that they only had radio dispatches during part of that time. There is, however, one disquieting fact. Dan Hopkins apparently was at the Metro Center when this happened and was talking to a police officer who phoned in to the radio dispatch and actually apparently communicated with the officers on the scene, at least this is what Dan Hopkins' impression was, and had a conversation along the lines of, what can we do? And he used the phrase, do what you have to do. And Dan found this somewhat ominous. Some of us were wondering, of course, questions like, was the toy gun which was found by Happy John Dine's side actually ever being brandished, or even ever being reached for, or was it all the time in his backpack, and then later pulled out by Officer Martin Overt in the course of a hurried attempt to justify a shooting after the fact. There are several people who saw Overt rummaging through Dine's effects immediately after the shooting, and nobody saw the gun in his hand as the officers originally claimed was there in the original story, which was presented by D.A.R. Danner and Police Chief Steve Belcher somewhat 15 hours after the shooting in a public press conference. So there are questions that remain about this dispatch tape and questions that remain about the whole case. It's becoming blasé to shoot people. The toy gun, and a pretext that he had a toy gun, he was reaching for his keys, or in Seaside he had a corkscrew, in the case of Charles Vaughn Sr., the man who was shot on the roof of the Seaside apartment. It's a serious matter, the kinds of shootings that we're finding happening, police vis-a-vis civilians. And again, we have no effective police review whatsoever. We have no way of calling people to the book unless you happen to be wealthy enough to have an attorney, to hire investigators, to be able to spend years taking folks to court. So it's no joke. Which kind of brings to mind, maybe leads us into this this next song, which we should have a musical break every now and then, is another one of my favorites from the 80s by Peter, Paul, and Mary about El Salvador when the U.S. was actually...
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, Under Siege here at 96.3 FM, and it's time for Earth First Radio.